If it pleases the court, Christopher White, on behalf of the New Jersey Department of the Public Advocate Division of Rate Counsel. Rate Counsel asks that the court vacate the FCC's waiver order that makes ratepayers pay the ILEX liability for violations of Section 201B instead of the companies and their shareholders. The waiver order takes a damage claim of the payphone operator and turns it into affirmative relief for the wrongdoers in this case. This is the fourth time this court
has... Wrongdoers because they obeyed the explicit orders of the Federal Communication
Commission. No, the wrongdoers because this court previously, on two separate previous orders, decided
that they... decisions of the FCC so that they didn't have to keep doing it.
Your Honor, this court found that there was liability for violations of Section 201B of the Act, and that that liability was not excused because they followed the orders of the FCC, specifically in Verizon versus the FCC, which this was the exact same panel that heard that case. The court specifically said in that case that because the FCC bungled the case, this should not make a mockery of the appellate review and error correction.
Right.
So
that dealt with it as between the companies. Now, had the FCC not made the original mistake, end users would have paid the rate here, right? Not necessarily the same end users, but end users would have paid the rate had the FCC never erred in the first place, right?
No, that is not correct.
Not correct? Who would have borne the freight?
Under the FCC's rules in place, the end users were the payphone operators. The payphone operators were improperly assessed and charged.
But had they not been improperly assessed, where would the rates have fallen? On whom?
It would not have fallen upon ratepayers because the...
Who would they have fallen on?
There wouldn't have been the assessment of the UCL charge in the first instance, Your Honor. The whole case is about improper assessment of a charge against the payphone operators, which the incumbent LEX did not assess against.
The purpose in UCLA is a cost allocation, right?
No.
It was not?
The regulations at issue in this case address, the FCC already made the determination in 83. When this case began. This case has been pending over 24 years.
We're well aware of the frequency.
And for 21 of those years, it was a private dispute between the payphone operators and the incumbent local exchange carriers about whether they were improperly assessed a charge. In 2005, they filed a petition before the FCC to make ratepayers responsible for the damage liability of the ILEX for not following the appropriate, correct FCC rule. That is a significant fact in this case. You take a private cause of action. We wouldn't be here today if this was still a private cause of action between the payphone operators and the ILEX. We're here today because they decided to turn around by this waiver order and make ratepayers responsible instead of the companies and their shareholders.
Where's the causation in standing here? Where's the causation in standing?
The injury is that the rates paid by ratepayers went up. It's specifically traceable to the waiver order that the FCC issued.
Specifically traceable to the subsequent tower filings that were not challenged?
First of all,
isn't that right?
Don't need to challenge the tariff filings.
You don't need to.
Your Honor, you do not have to. And the reason for that, first of all, if you look at the order, they directed how they determined damage to be calculated. Look at paragraph 19 of the order. There's no requirement in there that they actually file tariffs. They did file tariffs to implement the directions of the order. But the cause of action accrues when the FCC issued the waiver order. This is a garden variety standing case. The only thing that's not garden variety in this case is they're trying to make ratepayers responsible for the legal liability to pay the damage claims of the ILEX for violations of law. This case is directly controlled by Global Crossing versus Metrophone. They are responsible in damages. Damages are not cost. What was being asked for the relief here from the payphone was...
Suppose we disagree with your characterization of this as damages.
Then you're not following this...
Suppose we disagree. The consequence is what?
Then I think the court erred. It is damages. This is what this
Suppose
whole...
Suppose we disagree. Don't fight my hypothetical.
Okay.
I'm entitled to ask it.
You are, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask it again.
All
suppose
right.
We
and
disagree,
I'll try to
even
you
if it infuriates you that we do.
Okay.
But suppose we do.
All right.
What's the consequence?
All right.
Of that?
If these aren't damages, what are these?
No, I'm asking the question.
All right.
This is not law school now. What's the consequence, then?
If these aren't damages?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then there's no basis for what the FCC did. Because their whole claim is that the
you're
result...
You're not going to answer my question.
Well, then I guess I don't understand the question. But let me try to answer it. The consequences, if you find that these are not damages, then that would lead you to believe, then you would have to accept the proposition, I guess, that these are costs, and that these costs are recoverable in rates from ratepayers. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go that route,
you file tariffs to do that.
The reason they filed tariffs.
Do you file tariffs in those circumstances?
No, in this case,
you don't have to file a tariff to recover costs.
What complicates this?
Do you? I understand your argument.
All
I'm
right.
just trying to play out a different way. Okay,
all
I
right.
really am entitled to do that.
I understand, Your
okay,
Honor.
Okay, so let me do it.
All right.
Do you file tariffs?
Who files tariffs?
Do they file tariffs to recover costs?
Sometimes. Hmm. And I say some. The reason I say that, Your Honor,
is because you don't want to get in the box that you're going
no,
to get in.
No,
I don't, I'm not. You don't want to answer my question.
All right. Let me put it this way. The UCL charge, the underlying UCL charge, a rate cap regime that's in place, which they're saying now they want to enable them to recover as an exogenous event the obligation to pay damages. All right. That rate cap is a cap. It goes up and down over time based upon certain filings. In this case, the tariff filing that the ILACs actually made was to implement paragraph 19 of the order. It enabled them essentially to increase the rates that they did charge certain ratepayers. So yes, there is a tariff filing. Yes, they did it through a tariff filing. That tariff filing, though, was pursuant to a waiver order, which we're saying should be vacated by this court because it was issued in there.
Do you have the tariff filing to collect the costs?
I think probably they do need to make some filing.
The mere waiver filing does not create the injury because you might not file the tariff, right? Merely because you have the right to file a tariff doesn't mean you're going to. The injury occurs when you file a tariff, right?
No, I would argue that the injury
occurs. Well, I know what you argue, but I'm saying...
The problem with saying the injury occurs when you file the tariff is that...
And that tariff is subject to challenge, right? Mm-hmm.
If you have notice of the fact that they filed a tariff, yes. And then it also would mean that the FCC would have to determine that they were going to change course and decided that, well, it was wrong for us to decide that ratepayers have to pay it. And to the extent...
You're not suggesting futility, are you?
Yes, I am.
I see.
There is no way the FCC was going to turn around through a compliance filing to implement their order and say, well, we made a mistake now. And also, we filed our appeal when the FCC issued their order. We filed it within 60 days. The compliance filings that occurred were down the road.
Now, is this a general proposition that the FCC never admits error or just in this case?
Well, I would say from the amount of times been reversed by this panel and this court, I would say it's the rule, not the exception.
The counsel, since they're only going to get up here if there is a dispute, that really doesn't prove anything. You know, if you come in and say to the FCC, you're wrong, and the FCC says, yeah, we are, it never gets here, so it doesn't get an F3. Yeah, they get reversed, but the cases in which they have said admitted error never got here.
But this
hasn't proved anything by that.
Well, in this particular...
Going back to what I was asking you a while ago, what's the origin of EUCLA in the first place? Isn't it cost? This is long line cost, right?
The origin of EUCLA, if you go back, essentially, it was based upon regulations issued in 1980.
I know it's based on things, but what's the reason for it? Where do they get the numbers from? They're for long line costs, aren't they?
The way the price cap is supposed to work, it's supposed to represent...
It's routing long distance through their exchange. Is that not correct?
The EUCLA charge is also involved to apportionment of the local loop costs.
Right.
And
it's cost.
Recovery of those under
it's
the
rules. So somebody's
right.
going to bear it. And
but
if the FCC had not made the original errors in it, it would have gone to some sort of end user, would it not? It's not normally the case that shareholders bear cost because rates are computed in order to allow a profit margin.
That argument was made in terms of why they shouldn't be held liable in the
you
first place.
You don't want to answer your question, do you? You want to tell us what other arguments there are in the case. Right?
I'm trying to answer your question to the extent...
Then give me a yes or a no. You can try a lot harder if you answer the question than if you don't answer it.
Your Honor.
It's based on cost.
It's based upon costs.
Right?
It's based upon...
And costs are normally passed to some sort of rate payer or end user, right?
But damn it, you're correct.
No, don't give me any but. Give me a yes or a no.
Yes,
then you can
correct, Your Honor.
Yes, right.
But damages are not cost.
But damages recover errors in the allocation of costs sometimes, don't they?
Sometimes that
if
could...
If it's a make-whole remedy and not some sort of punitives, then it's recovering a misallocation, is it not? Is that not correct?
The issue about recovery of costs.
Never mind.
Your Honor, I'm trying to get to your question, but...
You're not trying very hard.
Well, then, let me put it this way. Under recovery of costs, there's no requirement that costs be recovered in a particular given year. Overall, the rate caps are supposed to establish rates that permit the recovery of cost over a period of time. All right? And those costs will change, but those costs aren't recovered in one period. And that's the point here. Whatever happened here, what we have here in 2007 are ratepayers being
asked. You're objecting to the passing of the cost to these ratepayers. Now, it may be the case that some other ratepayers would have borne the cost had the FCC not made its original mistake. But some ratepayer would have borne the cost because it's cost, right? Is that not the case?
That's not my understanding of what the FCC said here. Is that the collection of the EUCLA charge against payphone operators was improper, and that as a result they violated the commission rules and they were answerable in damages. That's what the FCC said. Now they're saying, well, yes, they're answerable in damages, but now we've decided that that despite that liability and damages, it's appropriate to grant a waiver in the public interest and make ratepayers pay for the damage liability. NACP versus Federal Power Commission. It's cited in the Mountain States case, which the government relies upon. You can't have a cost assessed against ratepayers unless there's a benefit to ratepayers. That is black letter Supreme Court law. There is no benefit here to ratepayers by thrusting the damage liability of the ILACs upon them for what was essentially a private dispute until they decided we'll grant a waiver. More importantly, this doesn't meet the standards for granting an exogenous adjustment under their own rules.
Exogenous cost, did you? Because that brought it back to being a cost.
Yes,
it's
and if
exogenous cost is the term you're looking for there.
Right, and if it's an exogenous cost, they still have to comply with their rules. It has to be beyond their control. This is not beyond their control.
It's not?
Compliance with the law, a mistake of law, is not beyond their control. More importantly, let's assume the waiver was a viable alternative. They can't wait until 2005 to file a waiver when discovery of the injury rule with this court would apply. They should have known it in either 2000 or 2002. It's barred by the 2-year statute of limitations. So that itself precludes the grant of waiver. More importantly, there's a whole issue here now that you're making ratepayers pay this damage claim, whether there's a retroactivity issue. The FCC failed to even address that in its order. They said, yes, it was raised, but we're not going to address it. This court in Verizon versus FCC, Arizona Grocery, specifically pointed out that it didn't apply in that case, but to the extent now we're dealing with a waiver that affects rates, the Arizona Grocery and its progeny comes in here, and there is a retroactive rate-making issue here that was not addressed by the FCC. And then again, in closing, can we just say the FCC came up with a lot of different reasons why its order was valid. Most of those reasons they didn't are post hoc rationalizations not found in the order. The order is very short on analysis. There's gaps in it, and it's intolerably moot in many respects to, in effect, make ratepayers to turn around a whole course of action over years and years and years where ratepayers aren't responsible for damage claims. And now they're saying they are because, oops, they got it wrong because the Bureau bungled it when they initially decided that it was proper for them to do. This is just not the correct decision, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. White.
And I reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
I'm afraid you've used it all.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Nandan Joshi for the FCC. I'll be fairly brief. I want to touch on what Judge Sentell started in terms of how this whole UCL charge works. And the rule then in the mid-90s and now is that the LECs must recover their non-traffic sensitive common line costs first through the UCL charge, and then if there are any costs left over, there are some other charges we mentioned through which they can recover their costs, for example, the carrier common line charge, which are typically imposed on long-distance carriers. Because of the Commission's error in 1993, LECs were required to assess the UCL charge on payphone providers. That reduced their overall the overall rates they could collect from other charges, such as the CCL charge. When the Commission changed course and required the LECs to refund the improperly collected UCL charges to the payphone providers in the payphone cases, that left the LECs with an under-recovery because of the Commission's error. Now, my colleague says that the LECs were not complying with the law, but in fact, the whole point of this exogenous cost waiver is the fact that they were complying with the Commission's order in effect at the time, as they were required to do under 47 U.S.C. 416C. This simply allows the LEC, this order under review simply allows the LECs to recover the costs that they have to pay back because of the Commission's error with regard to the treatment of payphone providers as end users. The other point I would like to make briefly is on the issue of standing and the filing of the tariffs. This order, the exogenous cost waiver order, allows the LECs to confirms to the LECs that if they file their tariffs, they may treat these costs as exogenous costs in their justification for their tariff rates. Now, those tariffs have been filed, they have gone into effect, and they're deemed lawful under 47 U.S.C. Section 204A3. As this court has held, there is no refund liability that can be assessed against a deemed lawful tariff. That prevents the Commission from awarding any refunds to New Jersey ratepayers were the Rate Council to prevail in this case. We think that Rate Council has not shown that they have any redressability. They have not even they have not attempted to show address that issue in their briefs in this case. Unless the court has any questions on the briefs, I will just rest with those 2 points.
Any questions?
No.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Joshi. Mr. White, thank you. The case is submitted.